Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A magnificent Monday to you. Welcome to the third week of Lent as we roll on through this season. We've got a great week planned for you. You can call in right now. Grab your place in line, 888-914-9149. It's a toll-free line to call, 888-914-9149. You can also email me at Cale, C-A-L-E, at relevantradio.com. And you can find me on Twitter, at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E. Clark with an E. Lots to talk about today. I don't know if you guys watched the Oscars last night. I did not. I had some things to do. It was my anniversary, my wedding anniversary, and went out for dinner with my family. But speaking of entertainment, I'm going to be talking about the Seinfeldian society in which we live. We tend to major in the minors. We tend to be apathetic about some of the big important things in life, and yet very passionate about trivial matters, what are relatively trivial matters. Why is that? Plus, we're going to talk about, since it's Monday, most of you guys are back to work now, how to resolve conflict with coworkers, especially if you're working remote. That makes it even more tricky. It's a really practical point. And we're also going to continue our novena to St. Joseph, getting ready for his feast day. It's day four of the novena. We'll have all of that and much more for you in just a couple moments. But in case you missed anything from last week, producer Jim Shaper has you covered. Here is the week that was on the Cale Clark Show. When you're really good at something, you'll always have a job, okay? And Michelangelo was absolutely the best. Even his enemies wanted to hire him. A lot of people don't know this because they think about him as a master of the visual arts, but he actually wrote several hundred poems, sonnets, madrigals over his career. And sometimes when he was working on statues, he would just sort of have a notebook handy and he would also write poetry as he was doing it. And he wrote about all kinds of things, human relationships, love. Believe it or not, he actually wrote a poem about his overactive bladder. Yes, imagine that. He actually talks about, quote, a drippy duct compelling me awake too early, end of quote. That didn't get published, that one, for some reason. There are people who don't need that much because they simply don't have a lot of wants. They need to cover the basics, but they don't really want to live in a gigantic home. They don't want to take 10 vacations a year. They're just content. So their needs are less. So you got to figure out what that is for you. So your wheel might not look completely round, but that's okay. That's okay. It's your wheel. And maybe it doesn't roll as fast as some others, but try not to get distracted by the wheels that other people are driving. Keeping up with the Joneses. Focus on yourself and focus on what you want to get out of life. And hopefully on the spiritual side of things, you want to become a canonized saint. That's the only goal worth shooting for. There are a lot of great and special women in salvation history. Let's go to Barbara in Passaic, New Jersey.
One of my favorite female saints is Saint Scholastica, the twin sister of Saint Benedict.
Right.
And it once a year, they would get together at a farmhouse to talk and, you know, discuss holy things. Mm-hmm. And the last time it happened, Saint Scholastica sensed that she was going to die soon, and she didn't want Saint Benedict, her twin brother, to leave, but he said he had to because it was against his rule to, you know, be leaving his monastery overnight. Mm-hmm. So she went and prayed, and it was a humongous storm, and he had to stay. And 3 days later, he had a dream where she passed.
I think he saw her soul ascend into heaven or something,
yes,
like that in the vision. Yeah.
Yes.
That's a great story. In fact, I think it was her feast day just a few days ago. A marriage is basically two sinners moving in under the same roof, right? So there's going to be some conflict. There's going to be some rough edges. We need that. We need that in a certain sense to become saints. St. Jose Maria said, look, if your character and the character of everybody else around you was as soft and sweet as a marshmallow, you would never become a saint. The Stay Puft Marshmallow Man. How sweet he is to be around. You just kind of bounce off him. No.
We used to roast Stay Puft Marshmallows by the fire at Camp Wakanda.
Ray has gone bye-bye, Egon.
What are the deathbed regrets that you have heard of that you know of? Ty Cobb, the Georgia Peach, one of the best baseball players of all time in the early 20th century, but also one of the meanest, nastiest pieces of work you could ever imagine for various reasons. You can look up some stories about his life. But allegedly, I heard the story, allegedly he had a deathbed conversion to Christianity in which he said, "I wish I had known this in the top of the first instead of the bottom of the ninth." The bottom of the ninth inning of life. I don't know if that's a true story or not. I don't know if that's a legit quote, but it's a pretty good one. Yeah, that's right. And Ty Cobb absolutely was hopefully received into the kingdom, and hopefully we all will be as well. That's what we're striving for, especially during Lent. We're trying to get better spiritually. We need to make sure that we don't major in the minors. It's really, really important. 888-914-9149's Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, and you can email me, cale@relevantradio.com. That was the week that was by producer Jim Shaper. Really appreciate that. And we're starting a new week. Last night, I don't know what you guys were up to, if you were watching the Academy Awards or not. I did not. I have not seen any of the pictures that were nominated for Best Picture. Haven't seen any of them. I used to be so on top of these things. I used to be, man, I would just, it's tough though. You get older, you get busy, you can't watch every sporting event, you can't watch every movie. You've got things to do. You've got important duties in life. And unfortunately for a lot of folks though, majoring in the minors has become a way of life. Trivial Pursuit for some is not just a game, but it's their daily practice. And I read an interesting piece that was written by an author named Uche Anazor. It's really kind of it's taken from a book that he wrote called Overcoming Apathy. Overcoming Apathy. And apathy is something that is so prevalent, so toxic in this generation. We really live in the, my dad is always talking, you know, we live in the me generation. I want to say, Dad, we actually live in the meh generation, where people are just apathetic about everything, it seems. Well, not all people, but anyway, so this guy, Uche Anazor, he said that he became a Christian in the 1990s. And around the time that he discovered Jesus Christ, it was around the same time that he discovered the show Seinfeld. And of course, Seinfeld is one of the greatest shows of all time. Very quirky. We actually did a show on the Cale Clark Show. We did an episode on the 1990s, remembering the 90s and what some of the cultural lessons might be. But this guy, Uche Anazor, says that he built his entire Thursday night around watching that, the latest episode of Seinfeld. Back in the day, you kind of had to do that. It was appointment viewing. You could not stream it. You couldn't download it whenever you wanted to. You had to be there at that time. I mean, maybe you could set up your VCR to record it, but for many people, it was appointment viewing. And in fact, during its last five seasons, 30 million people tuned in every Thursday night to watch Seinfeld. In fact, the finale, the final episode, garnered 76 million viewers. And it still is a cultural phenomenon today in a certain respect. It's in syndication. It's on all the time. It's ubiquitous. And there was an episode in season four. It was actually season four, episode 9. The title of the episode was called The Pitch. And in this episode, Jerry and George, and of course, Jerry plays himself in a certain sense, Jerry Seinfeld. George, the character of George, was played by Jason Alexander. And they're talking about coming up with a pilot for a TV show, and they want to pitch it to NBC. And so here's some dialogue from that episode called The Pitch between Jerry and George. This isn't the clip, Jim. This is just a setup for the clip. So they're talking about it. Jerry and George are talking about what ideas they might pitch to the NBC executives. And at some point, George says, "This should be the show. This should be the show." And Jerry says, "What?" And George says, "This, just talking." And Jerry says, "Yeah, right. George, I'm really serious. I think that's a good idea." Jerry, "Just talking? What's the show about?" George, "It's about nothing." Jerry, "No story?" George, "No, forget the story." Jerry, "No, you got to have a story." George, "Who says you got to have a story?" The conversation just keeps going, and Jerry just doesn't seem to get the concept. He finally says, "I still don't know what the idea is." And George says, "It's about nothing." Jerry says, right, right. George says, everybody's doing something. We'll do nothing. Jerry, so we go into NBC. We tell them we've got an idea for a show about nothing. And George says, exactly. All right, let me get this straight. They say, what's your show about? I say, nothing. George says, there you go. And Jerry says, I think you may have something here. So here's a clip of how they actually pitched the show to NBC executives. Here you go.
Well, we've thought about this in a variety of ways, but the basic idea is I would play myself. Go ahead.
I think I can sum up the show for you with one word. Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
What does that mean?
The show is about nothing.
Well, it's not about nothing.
No, it's about nothing.
Well, maybe in philosophy, but even nothing is something.
Mr. Dalrymple, your niece is on the phone.
I'll call back.
D-A-L-R-I-M-P-E-L.
Not even close.
Is that with a Y?
No.
What's the premise?
Well, as I was saying, I would play myself and as a comedian living in New York. And I have a friend and a neighbor and an ex-girlfriend, which is all true.
Yeah, but nothing happens on the show. It's just like life. You know, you eat, you go shopping, you read, you eat, you read, you go shopping.
You read? You read on the show?
Well, I don't know about the reading. We didn't discuss the reading. Well,
all right, tell me about the stories. What kind of stories?
Oh, no. No stories.
No stories? So what is it?
What did you do today?
I got up and came to work.
There's a show. That's a show.
How is that a show?
Well, maybe something happens to you on the way to work.
No, 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 nothing happens.
Well, something happens.
Well, why am I watching it?
Because it's on TV.
Not yet.
Because it's on TV, not yet. And that's the thing. People used to watch shows just because they were on and you really didn't have much choice. Now, of course, there's a smorgasbord of choices. You could be listening to podcasts. You could be listening to the radio. Hopefully, you're listening to Relevant Radio. And you can even listen to Relevant Radio as a podcast, of course, through the Relevant Radio app. You can download all the episodes. But back then, you really didn't have much choice. But really funny clip there from Seinfeld. A show about nothing. They're pitching the show about nothing to NBC executives. So how meta is that? How meta is that? With apologies to Zuckerberg, of course, when I say meta. But Larry David, who co-created the show with Jerry Seinfeld, and one of the reasons why the show was so great, and Seinfeld talks about this, is that he and Larry David would essentially just lock themselves in a room when they were writing each episode, and they would not leave until their work was done. They just were perfectionists about every single episode, every single line of dialogue. And Larry David had this motto for the show, and it was no hugging, no learning. So when you watch Seinfeld, you weren't there to really learn anything. And he was kind of, in a sense, thumbing his nose towards previous TV shows and conventions at the time. But it really wasn't about nothing. And this is one of the things that Uche Anazor says in his article, is that the show really wasn't about nothing. It was per se, but it was actually a show about insignificant things. It was a show about petty things. And it normalized indifference towards the big things, the things that really matter in life, marriage, family, religion, social things that were happening. It was all about a fixation on the minutiae of daily life, getting a good parking spot, how annoying close talkers can be, how do you maintain your high score in the Frogger video game. So it was all about little things that really aren't that important. And the series finale was essentially a microcosm of all of that. So in the finale, in the last episode, they're waiting around, the four main characters, in the small fictional town of Latham, Massachusetts. And then they witness sort of a crime happening. There's an overweight man who gets carjacked, but they don't help him. They instead sit back and they make jokes about him, about his weight. They videotape the assault as it's happening. Very similar to what goes on today, of course. There's a lot of clips about bystanders. Instead of jumping in to help, they're filming this stuff for YouTube and for social media, for TikTok, whatever. So that's what Seinfeld and his friends do. They simply record the assault and then they walk away. The victim notices, tells the police about them, and then they get arrested for violating the Good Samaritan law, which is an actual statute requiring bystanders to help when other people are in danger. So they go to trial. The prosecutors call in all these witnesses who are characters from past episodes. It's pretty funny to demonstrate just how horrible these people are as humans. And finally, the judge reads out the verdict. Jerry and his friends are guilty. And the judge's closing statement in part says this, quote, "I don't know how or under what circumstances the four of you found each other, but your callous indifference and utter disregard for everything that is good and decent has rocked the very foundation upon which our society is built." So they're sent to jail for a year. That's their punishment. And they sort of just resume doing what they were doing before, talking about indifferent things that don't really matter. Jerry starts talking about the location of George's shirt button, which is exactly what he and Jerry talked about in the very first scene of the very first episode of the series. And that was the end of the show. And the characters haven't learned anything. They haven't grown as people at all. So Larry David used to say this about Seinfeld. A lot of people don't understand, he said, that Seinfeld is actually a really, really dark show. It's really dark. And so Uche Anazor starts talking about this in his article about what he calls the Seinfeldian society. Because he said, man, like when I think about how much time I spent watching the show, and not only Seinfeld, but also shows like The Simpsons, Friends, they really affected the way I looked at life at the time. And if you keep absorbing this steady diet of pop culture, those attitudes, and specifically with Seinfeld and its ilk, the attitude of indifference really is something that you pick up on, almost by osmosis. And so he says, quote, "I grew to believe that it was cooler not to care about meaningful things, or at least not to put any earnestness on display. I knew in my head that there were important things in the world to care about. However, I couldn't bring myself to care deeply enough about them or to move towards them. I don't believe I'm alone in this. I think many of us experience this disconnect between head, heart, and hands. We know what is good. We know what is right. We know what's life-giving, but we can't seem to lift a finger to do anything about it. We know that a bit of quiet reflection would do us some good, but we hit play on the fourth consecutive episode of whatever show we're into instead. We are aware that spending time worshiping God would inspire us, but we'd rather sleep in, especially after last night's Netflix marathon." So he calls this the curse of apathy. And a lot of people have been stricken by it. We live in a culture that's plagued by it. He calls it a Seinfeldian society where only inconsequential things seem to matter. So he says, we're numb to the meaningful, but we're alive to the trivial. He says, quote, "Some things evoke passion in us, other things induce yawns. The paradox of apathy is that we're captivated by the things that we don't really care about. And we're lukewarm to the things that, in our heart of hearts, mean the most to us. We don't act on what we should act on, but we are awakened to things that we should probably ignore." Apathy is not careless. It is care adrift, care misplaced. As another writer puts it, our culture is a breeding ground for chronic apathy due to the proliferation of distractions available to us. We are regularly invited to care, just not too much or about too important of a matter. In fact, our busyness serves only to exacerbate our disengagement from meaning and to keep our spirits in a state of lethargy. End of quote. I think that's very true. And there are things that we don't act on what we should act on. I like this line, but we're awakened to things that we should probably ignore. I would say a lot of what passes for news these days, we should probably ignore because it doesn't have any bearing on our day-to-day life and what we ought to be doing. It's good to be informed, but as we know, there's a spin to the news. There are ways that people want to rile us up, if you will. And he also talked about how important it is as a matter of faith, because as believers in Jesus Christ, we have this mission. We have to bring Christ to the world. That's what we try to do every day on Relevant Radio, bring Christ to the world through the media. And we have access, we have full, free access to the most significant realities in the universe. And sometimes we take it for granted. Sometimes we're not even thinking about it. because we are in the world. The scriptures tell us that we're in the world, but not of the world. And it's kind of like being in a boat, almost like being in the fishing boat of Peter. And that's a great metaphor for the church, the bark of Peter, the fishing boat of Peter. But sometimes it can spring a leak. If that's the church and the world around it is the water, the boat can spring a leak, and sometimes it gets in. And these ideas, what's going on in the zeitgeist and the culture can creep into the church, and it can really shape our minds if we're not careful. If our minds aren't formed by the scriptures, shaped by the scriptures, they're going to be shaped by what society thinks is important. So where does this show up, do you think, in most people's lives? You can call in 888-914-9149 if you have a take on that. 888-914-9149. Where does this attitude of apathy, majoring in the minors, caring about nothing, where does that show up in most people's lives? And how does it hinder people from living fully the life of the kingdom that Jesus promises? He says, I have come that you might have life and have it to the full. And that is not nothing, folks. That is not nothing. And Jesus wants us to have that. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. We'll be right back after this. 888-914-9149. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
This is The Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call to talk to me for free on Relevant Radio. 888-914-9149. Hey, the phones are hot right now. Let's go to Fran, who is calling from Boquilia, Florida. Boquilia, did I get that right?
Yes, it is Boquilia, Florida. You got that right.
What part of Florida
we're
is...
We're still here.
Are you still...
Southwest.
Southwest.
We're still here. No, we got hit with Ian. So,
yeah.
Fort Myers, Cape Coral, Naples mm-hmm. area.
Yep.
Give you an idea.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know a lot of people down there that got hit hard. And I was actually down there at Christmas
Matt
time.
It was... And St. James City is devastated here.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be still a long rebuild, but...
Well, yeah, and I'm blessed. I have both my house and my garage just lost the roofs, but I'm right now cleaning my front porch that is so scarily nasty that and I was outside, but I heard your show because I'm listening to it, and I heard you talking about the show about nothing, and I mm-hmm. remembered that show, and I was telling whoever it was that answered the phone. I'm sorry, I didn't get his name.
Patrick.
Anyway. Patrick. Okay, so anyhow, I used to watch Seinfeld and mm-hmm. Friends, and if I wasn't going to be home, I had to tape it. I couldn't leave the house without that.
Yeah.
Now, this was 26 years ago, 25 years ago, whatever. Now, for 35 years, I was away from church, mm-hmm. and I came back about 25 years ago.
Wow, that's
And Mother Angelica got me mm-hmm. really indoctrinated. And then as I grew out of Mother Angelica, plus she died on me, but the show's still good. I still, you know, but now I listen to Relevant Radio because now I have you and it's a more mature, you know, teaching. And I've already got the basics. But I got to tell you, I tried to watch Seinfeld one day because I was someplace uh-huh. where they had regular TV. And uh-huh. I can't watch those shows. And I have no idea how I watch them.
But you just find them too banal, too, you know.
No, it's not even that. The messages they were giving you was how to ruin your life in three easy lessons.
Yeah.
It was everything you shouldn't do is what they were promoting.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And
that's true.
Did you hear the thing that Archbishop Fulton Sheen said one time?
It's he like said a lot frog, of stuff, but
okay,
the frog in boiling water?
The boiling water, yeah. you know, it's nice and cool when he goes in. He's having a good time. The heat gets turned up. You get a little, he's still having a good time before you know it, he's boiled. Well, that's what television did to me, personally. Yeah. And I know it's doing it to the rest of the world, and I don't know how people are watching the stuff that's on TV. I don't know how they're putting this stuff on TV.
Well, Fran, I thank you for the call, and that's one of the reasons why we have Relevant Radio. Thankfully, we're able to broadcast this message of Christ, and provide people with hope and pray for us. We try to do the best job that we can every day, and I'm so happy that you discovered us. That is fantastic. And so glad that you're listening to us as you're cleaning your porch out in Florida, and appreciate you so much for calling in, Fran. Call back anytime. Thank you for your kind words. Please pray for me and all the other personnel here at Relevant Radio as we work together. And you might be on your front porch sipping some sweet tea or something like that, or you might be on the road wherever you are. You might be at home. Give me a call, 888-914-9149. Let's go to Joe in San Francisco. Hey, Joe, how you doing?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for your program. You know, you make a big difference. So thank you.
Oh, thank you. That's really humbling. Thank you for saying that. I appreciate that a lot. Thanks, Joe.
So 15 years ago, I stopped newspaper, talk radio, TV. I don't want all this negativity, all this baggage, all this garbage. I have no control over any of it. So I tell people, you've heard of gamblers, addicts. There's news addiction, too. So the other night, I happened to be at a store, and this lady had a great attitude that was checking me out. And I said, you have a wonderful attitude. And she said, well, I don't feel that great. And I said, what's the matter? And she said, well, you know, I was listening to the news, and then this girl got killed in Santa Rosa, and blah, 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 blah. And I said, ma'am, you can control it. Stop it. Stop the news. And then you wouldn't have this feeling. Stop it. So what I did was, next door happened to be a florist. I went into the flower shop. I got her some flowers and some candy. I brought it into her. She looked at me like I'm a ghost. And she said, for me? And I said, yes. I said, ma'am, you're not alone.
I love
that. You make a difference. So stop the news. So we can make a big difference. All we have to do is get out of our heads and stop all the pain body, because everyone has a pain body. It needs to be fed. Don't feed yourself all this negativity. It's not doing you and no one else any bit of good.
Yeah, Joe, that's a really great point. That was really kind of you to do that for her. Wow, that's great. And thank you for your kind words as well. I think one of the things we have to do, and this is maybe something that we can focus on a little bit more in Lent, because we want to take on these penances. We want to take on these what are called mortifications. And within that word mortification, there's the French word mort, which means death, M-O-R-T. And we kind of want to die to ourselves, as Paul says, die daily. I pick up my cross every day, as Jesus tells us to. But we also can't forget about the interior mortifications, our interior penances. And maybe one of the things that we can do is to kind of mortify our curiosity. And this is part of why this stuff is so addictive, I think, Joe. And thanks for mentioning all that stuff, because it's so true. And most of the news is designed to either make us angry, get us down, get us worried, get us anxious, so that we come back for more. And we're trying to find the answers. And inquiring minds want to know. And this preys on, I think, our desire for knowledge. And this is part of why we're created in the image of God. We are created to know the truth and love the truth. We seek for the truth. That's what scientific knowledge is all about. We strive to know things. We have a knowable universe. But if we're not careful, we can channel that desire to know into the wrong thing, into the wrong areas, or maybe spend way too much time on those things. So curtailing that is really important. Otherwise, we can get out of control. We can go down so many rabbit holes. And hey, I've been there. I'm tempted to do it. Sometimes I do it. Sometimes I spend too much time scrolling on Twitter. And I think, oh my goodness, look at how many minutes have gone by. Maybe not even minutes, maybe hours. And sometimes I'm looking for show ideas and I find a lot of stuff there. But also, wow, there are other things that need to be done. We've got to organize our time and really use it well to God's glory. So some really salient points there that you made, Joe. Really appreciate that call. Joe in San Francisco, call back anytime. Let's go now. We're going to stay in California. We're going to go to Lulu in San Diego. Hi, Lulu.
Hi.
Hey.
On Sunday, on Sunday, I had my grandkids out riding bikes. And we live in a little cul-de-sac. And I said, guys, go enjoy the sun. It's out. It's not raining. So they got on their bikes, and two little ones down on the end of the cul-de-sac came out to ride their bikes with training wheels. And I said, go say hi. Go say hi. My grandsons are nine. These were maybe about 4 or 5 years old. I said, go say hi. No, no. Why not? They just shake their head almost in fear and go off. And I couldn't believe it. Why can't they say hi? And then the other day I'm at the grocery store, and I'm walking across to the grocery store right there by the driveway of the store, and this kid on an electric bike almost runs me over. Doesn't even look. They are so indifferent to people. Mm. It's just like, I don't know. It's they don't care, or they are so self-absorbed that they're afraid to relate to other people. I mean, you barely see people smiling anymore.
Yeah, that's true. I think a lot of people, they're just looking at their phone. Their heads are down. They're not really paying attention to what's around them. And I think a couple of things. Now, not every kid is like that. There are a lot of kids who are super positive and super enthusiastic and very helpful to others, of course. But there are certainly some who are maybe a little bit more callous and self-centered, for sure. And there are reasons for that. They didn't, fall out of the womb like that. They were. This is part of environment. This is part of conditioning, for sure. I do think, though, that because a lot of young people are communicating mostly online, they do have a hard time communicating in person now. I just think that's a generalization. And I think, I don't want to sound like a get off my lawn kind of person, but I think it's true that. Young people today, they're having some trouble with communication in person. And I'm going to actually share a story about how to do that a little bit better in just a little bit on the show. But I think part of it is just they're not used to it. This is a huge generalization here, but one thing that you see over and over again from some adults, not everybody, they have noticed that homeschooled kids they seem to be more confident, especially in talking to adults and being able to hold a conversation. And just, that's a huge generalization. There are obviously kids who go to public schools who probably could do exactly the same thing. But I think a lot of it is confidence. A lot of it is experience and what they're actually doing. Are they getting any practice at this? Are they having positive interactions with people in which they can communicate? I think there's something to that, for sure. There's something to that. In this digital age, we've lost that ability. And some kids are just naturally shy, too, in terms of playing with other kids that they don't know. That could have been part of it as well. But thanks so much for the call, Lulu. That's really great stuff. Let's go to Ronnie on line one. Hi, Ronnie. Ronnie's calling from Brooklyn.
Bill.
Hey, Ronnie.
Yeah. Hi, good to hear from you. Anyway, the story I have is that I know a carpenter that works close from my house. He's a good carpenter, and I'm a carpenter also. I'm retired, though, but I still do side work once in a while. Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, he treated me to lunch one day, and we had lunch. He paid. I paid the tip. Then the next day, I treated him for lunch when he was on his lunch break, and we went to this pizza place in the neighborhood. So now, previously, I go to that pizza place quite often, and everything's very friendly. All the workers there are very nice. And everything's good and respectful and good. But now, once in a while, the boss is there. And now, we were there having lunch together. And we ordered pizza, and we were eating our pizza. And this guy is a loud talker. And his favorite subject is Christ. And he quotes scripture. And I am, too, the same way. I mean, I'm not as loud as him, although I am kind of loud. But we were having a great conversation about Christ, heaven, and the way the society is going today is sort of anti-Christ and all this, you know. And we were talking no bad words or anything, you know. And we were the only customers in the store, just the two of us. And the boss was there. And then a friend of ours walked in with his wife. But the boss didn't know that this was our friend. And he is in union with us, as far as that goes.
Okay.
Well, anyway, my friend had to leave to go back to work. And when he left, I went to pay the bill. And the boss let me have it. He says, you've got no respect. He says, you for my customers and all this kind of stuff. And he was so upset that, but we were talking about Christ and God and good things. Everything was good we were speaking about, you know. And yet he didn't appreciate it. And I felt very slighted by him. And that I didn't know he was such a ruthless guy like that, you know. So I didn't know what to say to him, except what I did say is this. I said, listen, you're entitled to your opinion. I respect what you think. And good night. Or well, I just walked out, you know, and that's about the size of it. But people, you talk about Christ and things that really matter in this world, like love and peace and joy and happiness and mutual friendship and all this kind of brotherhood, you know. People want something. A lot of people don't want to hear this. They want to talk about, like, you know, Seinfeld. They want to talk about what Seinfeld talks about, nonsense. Things are the trivial stuff.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, Ronnie. And I think the thing to do is obviously just pray for this guy. Obviously, that's an important thing to do. Keep him in your prayers. And who knows, in terms of his particular case, why he doesn't want to hear about this. I think Jesus does provoke strong reactions in people. When they know the real Jesus, when they read and encounter the Jesus in the Gospels, as one writer says, he never leaves you indifferent. And he inspired really one of three different reactions. People either loved him, they wanted to kill him. I mean, very few people were sort of, I can take him or leave him. So he is the personality of history. And I think also people probably just don't want to be, some people don't want to think about spiritual realities. Again, this is part of the numbness of the modern age. We're sort of anesthetized to things that really matter, but they do matter. And people, it just reminds people, I think, of eternity, of, I don't know. Or the other thing too is you never know. He may have had a terrible experience with religion in his life and he's maybe biased against it. I don't know. Or coming from a place of hurt, you never know. The best thing you can do is just pray for that person. And, but at least he cares. I'll give him that. At least he cares. He wasn't indifferent about it. And a lot of people who are irreligious in today's culture, they are indifferent. They are part of that apathetic meh generation. Not the me generation, the meh generation. And I'd rather take somebody who's somewhat hostile any day of the week over somebody who's apathetic, because at least they care. At least they care. You can kind of work with that. All right, if you're on the line, stick with me. 888-914-9149. Try to get your calls. Got to take a quick break right now on the Cale Clark Show, but we will be right back.
This is the Cale Clark Show, giving you the confidence you need to bring the faith into everyday life.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149. And Austin Healy Sprite, that is a rare find, let me tell you. Wow, that's so generous. And go to relevantradio.com/car. You want to donate your old vehicle, even if it's a classic. Hey, we'll take it and we'll put it to good use for the kingdom. All right. Well, as I said earlier in the program, I wanted to give you guys just a little quick tip on communication. And we talked earlier, there was a caller who called in saying that, you know, it seems like people today, especially younger people, don't know how to communicate face to face. And this can be a real tricky problem when we get into the workforce and we get into conflict, because conflict happens between people. I mean, we're all sinners. We live together. We work together. There's going to be some stuff happening. And how do you resolve it? That is the key. Well, in the Harvard Business Review, there was a piece by Leanne Davey talking about how to resolve conflicts with coworkers, specifically remote coworkers. I think this can work well no matter what, but we do live in an age of remote work. And sometimes we have colleagues, even if we do go to an office, we may have other colleagues who are off-site. You're communicating via Zoom or even through email and text. And what if conflicts arise? How do you deal with that? It's tough. It's tough because when you're in face-to-face communication, and one thing I found is that Zoom does count. It's better than just being on the phone in terms of being able to see people's reactions and things like that. But it's nothing like being live and in the moment, as we like to say on Relevant Radio, face-to-face, because people give nonverbal clues. I think over 90% of communication is nonverbal. It's physical. So without that, if you can't see the person in front of you, it's really difficult to gauge how things are going. So let's say you're having a problem with a coworker or there's some sort of a misunderstanding that's come up. Leanne Davey, writing for the Harvard Business Review, says, well, if you're in the office, you can sort of rely on informal office interactions to kind of smooth things over. You can go to the water cooler or maybe sit down and have lunch with this person and try to reestablish trust. And when you're in person also, small irritating things that don't get addressed, that doesn't happen as much. But when you're working remote, it can be a big problem because if things are not addressed, if sources of conflict are not dealt with, they can really impact work. So what do you do? What do you do if you're having an issue with a coworker who's working remote? She says maybe the thing you don't want to do is phone them out of the blue and just start sharing feedback. And you might think it's constructive criticism, but the element of surprise is probably not a good thing because they're not expecting it. They're going to be defensive. They're going to put up a shell. It's actually going to hurt the trust between you and this colleague. So she says instead of doing that, instead of surprising the other person, give them a call or maybe send them an email, text them, and ask if you can set up a time in the near future to talk about how things have been going. So you could say something like, I'm finding it challenging working remotely, and I'd like to spend some time talking to you about what's working and how we could be more effective. So that's a good opener. So, and she says, when you do have that conversation, if you can, obviously the person's remote, so you're going to try to do what you can do. It's not perfect, but it is probably better to use some sort of video call, whether it's FaceTime or Zoom or something like that, and try to get some video in addition to audio and try to pick up on as many facial expressions as you can. So she says, really, the thing you want to do is start off with saying something like, thanks so much for setting up this time. I thought it would be valuable to give each other some feedback and talk about how we can work effectively at distance. So if you're having a problem with somebody, and this works in any situation too, not just when you're talking with somebody remotely, but if you're dealing with an issue, she says, first, provide crisp and clear observations of your teammates' behavior as free of judgment and subjectivity as possible. Now, what does that mean? This can work also in any kind of teamwork relationship, whether it's a marriage or an actual sports team or anything. So she says, instead of saying something like, you were rude to me, you could say something like this. When you interrupted me as I tried to be heard over the phone, dot, 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 dot. So don't just kind of go off on the person. The second thing you need to do, so try to describe what they're doing as free of judgment as possible. Just try to be objective. Second thing, describe the impact of the person's behavior on you. And don't say, this is the objective truth. This is the way it is. Just say, this is how it's impacted me. So here's an example. Quote, when you talked over me when I was on the conference call, I felt like you didn't respect what I had to say. End of quote. Now that's actually a really good thing. That's called an I message. That's an I message. And a lot of people who deal in communication talk about this all the time. Doug Hinderer, who specializes in marriage communication, he's been at Relevant Radio, was brought in to address our staff actually and talk about relationships and communication. And this is a really important thing. Now, I don't know if you use this expression, but it's called an I message, where you say something like, when you did this or when this happened, I felt like whatever. So it's an I message with apologies to Apple. And that's a good thing because it doesn't say the other person's a complete jerk. You're just saying, this is how it made you feel. This is how it made you feel. And then the last thing that one ought to do is ask an open-ended question that can engage your teammate in dialogue and help you understand each other. So for example, you might say, how did you perceive that call when we were in the meeting room together? You know, what did you think of that? And you know, usually with open-ended questions, people will expand and kind of give more information. So the other thing is just be honest about things, and you're not gonna, this isn't perfect. These conversations often don't go perfectly. If somebody asks you a question and you don't know the answer necessarily. If you're quiet, they might misinterpret your silence as anger or something like that. So you can actually say what's going on in your mind. Don't leave them hanging. Say, just give me a moment to think about that. I actually need to think. That's why I'm quiet. If you're surprised, if you get some feedback from maybe a supervisor that kind of shocks you, you can actually say that. You can say, wow, that's a surprise to me. I had no idea. If you're actually taken aback, maybe it's good to admit that. If you're struggling in the conversation, you can actually say, this is difficult for me. This is a hard thing to talk about, but I'm really glad that we're getting this stuff out there, getting it out in the open, getting it on the table. So that's a good thing that you can add to your conversation. Talk about the things that you're thinking and the things that you're feeling. Because we're humans. We have emotions as well, and that we're not just robots, and we don't just talk about things. We also have to talk about our feelings about these things. That sounds kind of touchy-feely, but it is important. The last thing that she says in this article, Leanne Davey, writing in the Harvard Business Review, says, you've got to have an action plan for how to, make an action plan for how you're going to deal with the issue. But especially with remote colleagues, if you're out of sight, you can easily slip out of mind. So at the end of your conversation, once you're talking about your issue, try to figure out an action plan. So if you decide, we're going to talk to each other every week to make sure that communication is clear on this issue, put it in your calendar right then. Make an appointment. Invite the other person through an online calendar. Send an invite. If you say you're going to follow up with something, put it in your own calendar and make sure that you actually do that. And so that's a good thing to do. Another thing you can do is follow up with a note through email or in person saying, thanks for the conversation. I got a much better sense of how tough it is for you when you're dependent on the team at the head office to make a deadline. I also feel like you understood my predicament in having multiple regional teams I have to support. As we agreed, from now on, we will have a weekly 15-minute touch point on Monday morning. Make sure our priorities are aligned. Thanks again. It's a good thing to do just to follow up, essentially. And so don't delay uncomfortable conversations, especially when it's with a remote colleague, because distance makes it even worse. Avoiding an important conversation is bad enough when you're working together. It can be even worse with a virtual teammate. So how about that? We don't want things like that to sour our working relationships. And I just think it's really important, especially that whole section on what's called the I messages, as it were. When this happened, I felt like this. Because usually when people feel like they're being attacked, if they're being criticized, they kind of go into fight or flight mode. There's a part of the brain called the amygdala that triggers the fight or flight response. And usually people, if they don't want to fight, they at least want to defend themselves. So you got to try to make them understand it's not about them personally. And one way you can do that is by using these I messages, if you will. All right. Let's go to Ramona in Navarre, Florida. Hi, Ramona. We've got about 30 seconds or so. I know that's not much time, but I wanted to try to get you in here. What do you think?
Well, Clark, back on the idea of talking about nothing. I learned a lesson that even if what someone shares with me feels like nothing to me, I need to respect that. And I need to understand that may be important to them and find a way to relate somehow that it is important rather than communicate that it's nothing. I was traveling with my daughter long distance, and she shared a podcast with me, a couple of guys that just talk about things that interest them. And she said she loves it. She never misses it. And thousands of young people love this. Can't remember the name of it. And I made the mistake at the end of it of saying, well, I was just like, they talked about nothing for an hour. And I really hurt her. Mom, I thought you had all this Christian love. Where was it?
Oh my. You got to call back tomorrow. That's a big topic. But thanks for listening, everybody. I appreciate that. Cale Clark here. Stay tuned to Relevant Radio. Keep it locked. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.